You can also write it as the 4D plan scale versus the fundamental plan scale square goals as the fundamental plan scale divided some compactification scale to the power of n, where mc is just 1 over r, the size of the extra dimension. So you have fields propagating in an extra dimension of size r, you're going to have a Caruso-Klein tower of masses order 1 over r. So why this is solving the hierarchy problem? Because you can have a fundamental scale order the electroweak scale, so TeV, and still keep your observation that this scale is much, much bigger, it's 10 to the 18 GeVs, as long as you have a large hierarchy between these two. So you have reshuffled the hierarchy problem, why these two scales are so different, to a new problem. Why is the Planck scale so different from the compactification scale? And this is a drawback for large extra dimensions. So that's a pity. Because then the stabilizing this hierarchy means stabilizing the size of the extra dimensions. And that's not easy. You need to find a way of stabilizing these extra dimensions. So that's one drawback of large extra dimensions. The other drawback you want is by setting the fundamental Planck scale to order TeV, what you are saying is actually this is an end of the road kind of solution. You are saying, okay, so I cannot stabilize the Higgs at the TeV scale, so I'm going to imagine that everything I understand, quantum field theory, ends up at the TeV scale. So, as I said, the ADD people say this is not a drawback, this is exciting because it means that at the TeV scale, at the LHC, we are going to be able to probe a completely different area of physics, completely different physics. Instead of quantum field theory, it will be quantum gravity, black holes, and all kinds of weirdos. Okay, so that's an opportunity, and it's interesting. Let's see what the LHC says. Now let's talk about another proposal of extra dimensions that solves the hierarchy problem in another way. This is called the word extra dimensions. And the simplest model is called the Randall-Sundrum model. Randall-Sundrum. The idea of extra dimensions, and you saw that in Ruth's course, is not that M Planck fundamental is so different from the M Planck we measure for D. They are actually the same order, and this is the same as the order of the curvature. So we are talking about a highly curved space-time, but where all the dimensionful quantities, the fundamental constants, are all of the same order. So how is this solving the hierarchy problem? It solves it in a very, very nice way, in a kind of subtle way. All right. Why is this solving the hierarchy problem? It's because in a curved space-time, the physics you describe, the description of physics, depends on the observer position. So we are going to explain that, but starting with something you probably know about. So do you know about the cosmological redshift? No? Yes? A little bit? Okay. So the idea is that in cosmology, because the universe is expanding with the Friedman, you can describe that with the Friedman-Dobson-Walker metric. So you see that if I, at some point in time, let's say T0, I produce a photon of wavelength lambda, If I wait for long enough and another time t1, the universe will have expanded, and then this photon of wavelength lambda will seem to have a higher or longer wavelength. Or in other words, you emit a photon of a given momentum, and just by waiting, you don't do anything to the photon, it's not accelerated, nothing is happening to the photon except that the geometry itself is expanding. So apparently, the photon goes from having a high momentum to low momentum. Have you seen that in cosmology? Probably, no. Yeah, that's the first thing to understand. So the way you describe that is to say, well, so the momentum of the photon that you emit is going to be related to the momentum of the photon you observe by this factor here, the scale factor ratio. Right? This is the cosmological redshift. Nothing to do with a real redshift, it's just because the geometry itself is expanding. So you observe the same physics at different moments in the history of the universe, you are going to see a difference. You could also think, so why do we get this factor? It's because if you look at the metric in Friedman-Robertson-Walker, the time component, the G00, is a factor that depends on time. Expansion of the universe. So when you want to describe what is the momentum at a given time, you have to account for this factor. This is the G00. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so when you write the Friedman-Robertson-Walker as A squared, you write the dt squared here. So you are already saying it's commutative time. Right, so you could define this as d tau squared, the proper time. So what you are measuring inside your commoving coordinates is going to be this momentum, and that's what leads to the redshift. All right. So what Randall syndrome does is the same, but instead of being time, the thing that is highly curved is the extra dimension. So the idea of ABS is we have this metric that is going to be depending is highly curved in the extra dimension, Vy. Okay? So this is going to play the role of the time-time component, G00. So the Randall-Sundrum redshift is given by this exponential factor. So imagine I have this picture of Randall-Sundrum with y equals 0, and then I enter into the extra dimensions. And as I enter, the metric is taking different values. It goes as exponential of minus ky. So if I want to describe what is the local cutoff at a position y, I can relate this local cutoff to the cutoff in the at y equals 0. So the cutoff at any y is going to be exponential of minus ky, the cutoff in y equals 0. Just because this exponential at y equals 0 is just 1. So physics that looks as if they have a very high scale, n Planck order, n Planck four-dimensional order k, you start with a fundamental theory with very high scales, But depending on where you are located into the extra dimension, you are going to see completely different physics. Your local cutoff is shifting. This is the Randall-Sundrum redshift. Okay. So the hierarchy problem is trying to explain why the Planck scale is so different from the electroweak scale. So how do you think we are going to make the electroweak scale so low compared with the Planck scale? No idea. So you want your fundamental scale is Planck scale, super high. And you want a small scale here, your local cutoff to be TeV. Exactly, yes. So I just need to vary y until I get this order TeV. So that, yes? Yes, exactly. So I can put a different ray here, localize physics here, localize the standard model here, and then I would have that my local cutoff is order TeV. And what is interesting about the Randall-Sundrum is that you can get that by setting ky or TeV still an order one parameter. Because the dependence on ky is exponential, you don't need a big hierarchy to generate a large hierarchy between these two scales. So I can have the location of my brain to be very close to the fundamental scale, and still I get a large hierarchy. So that's a trivial way of solving the hierarchy problem, using exponentials. And you will see next week when we talk about the holographic interpretation of the RS model that this is precisely what you will do in dimensional transmutation. So we are going to understand this from the point of view of strongly coupled theories. All right, so the solution of the hierarchy problem in Randall-Sundrum is all achieved with M Planck, order M Planck 4D, order the curvature, order 1 over the y, TeV, of all the same order. Okay. So the conclusion for Randall-Sundrum is that physics may look very, very different depending on where you are located into the extra dimension. Move a little bit from the origin, the boundary of the extra dimension, and your physics is going to look different, your typical scale. So what you will hear, because physics changes so much depending on the location, what you will hear every time you see a Randall-Sundrum model talk is, where is what? The first thing you need to know is where is what. Where are all the fields located? Because if I put the standard model here, 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 I'm going to have completely different descriptions. So this is very important in the standard model. In Randall-Sundrum, the setup. When Randall and Sundrum did their first paper, what they assume is that everybody is in the TeV brain, in this brain located above, away from the boundary. But this ended up with problems. So people started putting things in the bulk, putting things here or there. What I'm going to give you as a picture of Randall-Sundrum is the state of the art, what people are doing these days. So yes. So to achieve zero, to get Minkowski brains, you need to get a fine tuning there. Two fine tunings.
Is that another exponential?
In that case, no, you just have to get them exactly the same. It's not exponential.
You still have a
yes. then you have a cosmological constant problem and you have another tuning of stabilizing the size of the extra dimension. But there is a mechanism to solve that called the Goldberg-Weiss mechanism. But the cosmological constant problem is always there. Okay, so the state of the art for RS models is to assume that everything that is light in the standard model is located near what is called the ultraviolet brain, the one located near zero. So here we locate light fermions such as leptons or up, down, and so on and so forth. Anything that is heavy in the standard model or the electrophobic scale will be located here. So in near the infrared brain, we are going to locate the top, the bottom, the Higgs, or whatever is making electrophobic symmetry to break. Also, all the Kaluza-Klein resonances, the low-lying Kaluza-Klein resonances will be located there. And that's it, I think. So now, there is another type of fields. They can either be UV localized, IR localized, but they can also be delocalized. So have fields that are completely flat in the extra dimensions. Guys that are flat in the extra dimensions are the photon, the gluon, the Darbion, the Z before electrophobic symmetry breaking. This is the picture that is used nowadays. Why are we using this picture? Because it leads to very interesting phenomenology, but also because in this picture is very clear what is the holographic interpretation of this model. So you are going to see this picture all the time because we are going to draw a dictionary between the RS models and technicolor models. So now I'm going to explain to you in detail how we localize and delocalize fields. Yes? Do you have a question? No?
Do you assume that only gravity can propagate in radio?
No, precisely. So nowadays, forget about the ADD idea. Everybody is propagating in the back. Everybody. We can do that because even if having a field in the back, we have mechanisms to localize them near one or the other brain. So we are going to do that for the scalar. So the most common setup these days for work extra dimensions is this one. So how do we localize fields near brains and how we delocalize fields to be completely flat in the extra dimension? The first thing we can do is an example that we tried to do yesterday in the tutorial of a scalar field in my lesson. So you remember we had the field of x and y. You decompose it as a sum over Kaluza-Kleins of a field that is four-dimensional and the wave function that just depends on the extra dimension. So we call this guy the wave function, the dependence on the extra dimension, and this is going to be our Kaluza-Klein field. Yes, so localized is when I can say this guy is close to the UV or close to the IR, that's localized. Delocalized is when I cannot say anything like that because it's really everywhere the same in the extra dimension. That's why it's delocalized. So if you look at the equations of motion for this wave function, you're going to obtain that they look as this. Okay. We have the kinetic term, so the Laplacian. If we allow this guy to have a bulk mass term, the way it shows up is with this exponential of minus 4ky fn. And then you say this is equals to the mass of the of Michaelis-Klein guy, an exponential, and fn again. So this is the equation I have to solve for the wave function to obtain the wave function of a particular Kaluza-Klein guy. So, as we were talking yesterday, the theory in five dimensions, the quantum field theory in five dimensions is non-renormalizable. So we had to approach extra dimensions from the particle physics point of view as an effective theory. So the idea is we are going to look at this Kaluza-Klein decomposition and describe physics by keeping the lowest modes, the ones with massless or the first Kaluza-Klein modes. But we are not going to describe the whole physics using the whole tower of Kaluza-Klein. So one thing that is very important to do phenomenology in Randall-Sundom is to find the zero modes, because those zero modes are going to be the standard model particles. So let's try to find the zero modes of this equation. Let's do the case where we set the bulk mass to zero. So this term here disappears, and we just have this equation involving the wave function times this. But now we want to know if there is a zero mode, meaning if I can set Mn to zero. And then the equation becomes very simple. This is not there, this is zero, so it just has this equation. I'm going to have minus partial y exponential. This equation has a trivial solution when the wave function is constant. So if fn is constant, then this equation is satisfied. So that's the wave function for my zero mode. Okay. So this is a solution for the bulk equations of motion, right? This is the equation of motion on the bulk. I also had to make sure that this solution is compatible with the boundary conditions. So what about the boundary conditions? Let's say in the notation of yesterday that I impose plus plus boundary conditions. That means that I'm saying the derivative of the field at both boundaries, the IR and the UV, is equal to zero. So as the field approaches to the brain, it has a constant profile. Is this solution satisfying the plus plus boundary conditions? Shoot me. Yes, it does, because the derivative of a constant is zero. Okay, so yes, that's cool. It does it. What about having minus minus? It means that the function itself at the IR or UV is zero. But because the function, the wave function is constant, if it's zero at the boundaries, it's zero everywhere. So if we impose minus minus, we are going to obtain that fn is zero. Sorry, it's not n, it's the zero mode. The wave function is zero, so there is no zero mode. So there is no zero mode in this, with these boundary conditions. What if we impose other boundary conditions such as minus plus or plus minus? So that I get derivative at the UV zero, but the function has to be zero at the IR. And because the guy is a constant, we are going to end up with the same condition that F naught is zero. So there is no zero mode for any plus minus or minus plus. Okay? So that's for let's see if I have time. For m equals 0, the solution is that either the wave function is a constant of the 0 mode, or the wave function is 0. So there is no 0 mode. That's for the plus plus, and this is for any other set of boundary conditions. So you see, with no bulk mass, what kind of profile are we getting? Localized or delocalized? Delocalized, yes, right. So delocalizing a field in randasundum is very simple, at least in the scalar case. Impose these boundary conditions, no bulk mass term, you are done. So can we localize things? Let's see. Now imagine we want to do the case of non-zero bulk mass, with the hope that by switching on this mass term, we are going to be able to get profiles, zero mode profiles, that are localized near the infrared of the ultraviolet range. So I'm looking for, again, solutions with no mass, so zero modes. I'm going to have this equation, this plus this equals zero. This equation has a simple solution as well. You can plug it in Mathematica. It's going to be the one you obtained yesterday. Exponential of 2ky, 1 minus alpha. And I'm going to define alpha c2, exponential of 2ky, 1 plus alpha. Where alpha is 1 plus m squared over 4k squared. So you can take this equation, redefine alpha this way, and then you obtain this solution. It's a very simple solution. It just depends on two exponentials with a minus or a plus sign over here. So this is the solution in the bulk. But to find the physical solution, we need to impose boundary conditions. Let's say we do plus plus boundary conditions. That means that the derivative of this guy on both brains had to vanish. And that gives us a solution. Like, so for example, yes, right. So if I take the first derivative of this guy and then substitute it at y equals 0, I'm going to get c1, 1 minus alpha, plus c2, 1 plus alpha, equals 0. That's from the derivative of the wave function at the UV equals 0. Now if I do the same in the infrared, I'm going to have 1 minus alpha, exponential of this 1 minus alpha guy, plus c2, 1 plus alpha, and the other exponential, 1 plus alpha. Other things equal 0. So if I impose this, two equations, I get a relation between C1 and C2, and here I get another relation between C1 and C2, and the only possible solution is that C1 is equal C2, 0. So solutions of this equation are C1, C2 equals 0, which means there is no 0 mode. So by switching on a bulk mass term, I get rid of the zero mode, and I don't have a massless mode in the scalar case. Can I still get a zero mode? Well, you can do a trick. Yesterday when we were talking about the action, we wrote down, okay, so this is the action in 4D, integral dy, and then we have the Lagrangian energy, the Lagrangian in the bulk, right? And this is what you were solving. But we can also write down something that is the same, d4x dy, and then add a delta term, delta y minus, for example, yir, so a localized term in the infrared brain, or a localized term in the ultraviolet brain, and then write a Lagrangian on the brain. So to the bulk theory, you can always add the brain terms, and these brain terms are going to modify the boundary conditions of your field. Why am I telling you this? It's because there is a particular combination you could add to your bulk mass term. You can add a mass term on the brain, on both brains. And if you choose particularly that these two guys have opposite sign to each other, then you get the following boundary condition. You get instead that the derivative of the field near the boundaries, either the ultraviolet or infrared, has to be equal to this mass term I added on the brain, F UV IR. So by adding this mass term, I'm changing the boundary condition in a particular way, in the way that now the derivative, instead of being zero, it has to match with the bulk mass, the brain mass. And the good thing about this brain localized term is that then I get the following solution. So now my equations of motion plus boundary conditions change from the plus plus case, and I get something like C1k 1 minus alpha. So I had to say the derivative equals the mass times the field, and get this equation both in the infrared and the ultraviolet brain. So let's do that. Plus C2k 1 plus alpha equals MB. That's for y equals 0, and for y equals 0, and for y equals the infrared brain position, then you get exactly the same, 1 minus alpha, but now it's multiplied by exponentials, in this case with the minus, 2, and so on and so forth. So you get a different equation. So you can recast this equation as C1 that multiplies 2k 1 minus alpha minus mb. So I'm just taking this guy and put it to the other side. Plus C2 2k 1 minus plus alpha minus mb equals 0. And the other equation will be exactly the same, but here you will have exponentials. So what is a obvious solution on this equation? Right now you had two parameters to play, right? Before you just had alpha, and there was no way of canceling this term or this term, but now you have mb to play, their boundary mass term. So you can either choose this to be zero, which means C2 is zero, or you can choose this one to be zero, which means C1 is zero. And either, no matter what the choice you do, at the end of the day you are going to have that the solution is something like 2k, sorry, mby. On my zero mode function, there is a zero mode. The zero mode is proportional to the bulk, the brain mass term. And either the brain mass term is chosen to be 1 minus alpha or to be 1 plus alpha. Well, this alpha, remember, contains the bulk mass. Okay, so this is 2k 1 plus or minus alpha. So why is this Interesting is because this bulk, this brain term can be either positive or negative. So if it's positive, what is going to be the localization of my zero mode? It's going to be an exponential going towards the infrared. If it's negative, it's going to be an exponential getting away from the ultraviolet. So in B, negative, and B, positive. So by adding mass terms, both in the bulk and in the brain, I get localization. But this is for M equals 0. So I can have in Randall Sundum, the conclusion is that in warp extra dimensions, it's easy to find localization or delocalization. You just have to set up your theory in a particular way. All right. So that's for scalar fields, but the things look very similar for fermions, for gravitons, and for gauge bosons. So let's talk about fermions now. We are lucky we are talking about 5D, because in 5D you can obtain chiral fermions. And we know standard model fermions are chiral. Okay? So the problem with a standard model, with extra dimensions, is that in general you always get a left-handed and a right-handed degree of freedom. And these guys, at least at the Kaluza-Klein level, in principle they could have the same mass. So you will never have a chiral theory where there is either left-handed or right-handed, but not both. So to obtain a chiral zero mode, I need to write zero modes and make sure I get rid of one of them. Like I project out one of the zero modes. So let's see how we do that in extra dimensions. We can do it in 5D because there is something nice about 5D. If you look at the gamma matrices in five dimensions, they are just gamma mu, so 0, 1, 2, 3. And when you have to look at the fifth one, you can always choose to be the gamma 5. And gamma 5 is what you use to project chiralities, right? And because of this fact, you can obtain chiral fermions in extra dimensions. So I can still define my five-dimensional field as psi L psi R, where I define psi L or R as being the projector, the usual projector over my field. So that's possible in an odd number of dimensions, but it's not possible in an even number of extra dimensions. All right. So what is the equation of motion for these fields in Randall Sundum? Well, first thing, we are going to redefine our fermions, left or right, to be equals minus 1/2 of ky, left and right, where these guys are the physical modes because they lead to canonical kinetic terms. I mean, this is not easy to know unless you do it, but there is a particular form for the wave function that leads to a canonically normalized kinetic term for the low energy theory. So you need to add this term here. So the equations for these guys are very simple. This one plus minus you get an equation for left-handed guys, and it's equal to some derivative of the right-handed guys and the mass of the right-handed guys. This, you are not surprised, because you know a mass term mixes left and right-handed guys. But also, the derivative in the extra dimension also mixes left and right-handed guys, acts as a mass as well. So you look at the same equation for the right-handed, you're going to get exactly the same. And now there is a negative sign here. So in those equations, we want to find zero modes. All right, so if I set Mn to zero, I'm looking for a zero mode for the low energy description of my theory, then I get rid of this. And why is this good? Because then my equations decouple. I no longer have left-handed and right-handed fermions in the same equation, but they have decoupled. And then it's very easy to solve. The equation is this plus or minus the mass of the fermion psi tilde left and right-handed equals zero. And the solution is also very easy. It's like this phi tilde is going to be proportional to the exponential of plus or minus n phi. This is the solution for this equation, not these phi tildes, but the one we are interested about is this guy. So actually my zero mode is going to be the exponential of 1 half minus plus n phi. Okay. So the profile of my zero mode, either the left or the right, see that I can only choose one of them. Either I decide that the left-handed guy is going to have a massless mode, then the right-handed guy doesn't have any, or vice versa. That's the way you can find a chiral theory in extra dimensions, is by choosing the right boundary condition. So, okay. So this is my solution. Let me call this dimension this quantity C. So C is going to be the bulk mass of the fermion divided by the curvature scale. And what I expect is the mass of the fermion, something like I'm adding in the bulk, should be of the same order of all other dimensionful quantities in phi d. So this is going to be an order one guy. So let's see how we localize fermions in extra dimensions. So we say my fermion is going to be proportional to an exponential of 1 half minus C, in this case for the left hand, KY. So if C is precisely 1 half, I have a flat mode. This is called the conformal limit. Because the fermion has a bulk mass term, you switch on something that gives some mass to the fermion, but still you get a profile that looks as if it didn't have any mass. That's the conformal limit. If C is bigger than 1 half, this is going to be a negative exponential, so this will be localized. But where is going to be localized? In the UV. UV localized. And if it's less than 1 half, then it will be IR localized. So you see in Randall-Sundum, the same as in the case of the scalars, we can do either way, localized or delocalized. And the only thing we have to choose is the bulk mass term. So it's even simpler. C 1/2 leads to a flat fermion. C bigger than 1/2 leads to a UV localized fermion. C smaller than 1/2 leads to a IR localized fermion. So for light fermions, I'm going to always choose C bigger than 1/2. And for the top, for example, I'm going to ask for C less than 1/2. For the moment, I'm just giving you the tools in extra dimensions. Next week, we are going to understand what these tools mean in terms of operators of a conformal field theory. But let's say there is a mechanism in extra dimensions to localize fields. So what about gravitons and gauge bosons? The story is very similar. I'm not going to repeat it. It's even simpler than the fermion case. But at the end of the day, for gauge and gravitons, gauge bosons and gravitons, you don't want to introduce any bulk mass term because this bulk mass term will break the phi d gauge invariance or the phi d Lorentz invariance, right? So you don't want that. You always set m equals 0, no bulk mass term. And then what you obtain is that the profile of the gauge boson, massless gauge boson, is a constant. Whereas the profile of the graviton is an exponential of minus this proportion, ky. So a massless graviton in phi d is UV localized. Alright? Whereas a gauge boson in phi d is delocalized. Okay. So that's just in terms of how we set up the models, and let's see what we can do with them. The first thing we can do is, okay, so we already solved the gauge hierarchy problem. That was a big deal. But there is another conundrum going on in physics, is the fermion hierarchy problem. Why is the electron so different from the tau, so different from the top, and so on and so forth? Why the masses of all fermions are so different? And you always say, okay, this is flavor physics, I have no clue, maybe there are symmetries. And the typical solution to the fermion hierarchy problem in the standard model is based on symmetries, in a bunch of them, actually. So you really have to do a lot of engineering in the standard model to explain the fermion mass hierarchy. Whereas Randall Sundum is going to give you a solution, very simple, and not based on symmetries. So you find hierarchies without symmetries. So for example, the problem is that the Yukawas, the way the Higgs couples to the electron or couples to the top is very, very different. And you can cast this as the Yukawa of the electron is much smaller than the Yukawa of the top. Orders of magnitude smaller. I mean, it's not a little problem. So the solution in extra dimensions is very simple. So let's say now I have my Randall Sundum model. I know that whatever is breaking electrobit symmetry is living near the electrobit brain. Let's call it let's say that it's really on top of the electrobit brain. And now I want to see where is the coupling of these guys to the zero modes that are living near the ultraviolet. That's simple. I just write down what is my action in phi d. I say it's d4x, dy, square root of g, and then I will write a coupling, a Yukawa coupling that mixes my left-handed guy with my right-handed guy. with the Higgs. But because my Higgs in principle depends on the four dimensions and the extra dimension. But for simplicity, let's say that the Higgs is living really on top of this brain. That's also very simple. You just write, I have a four-dimensional Higgs, and I impose that this Higgs is really living in the infrared brain. So this is the way we write a Yukawa in extra dimensions. And as usual in extra dimensions, we need to look at the dimensions of things. So what are the dimensions of these guys? Joel. Of this, what is the dimension? Mass dimensions of this.
It's probably -5.
Yes, I'm very good. This has no dimensions, we discussed that. What are the dimensions of these guys? Those are five-dimensional fermions. So instead of being three halves, they actually have dimension 2. So these two are going to give me 4. Okay? This is a regular Higgs, so it has dimension 1. And what is the dimension of the delta function? So one thing you know is that the delta integrated over the delta of z integrated over z gives 1, right? So what is the dimension of the delta function? Sorry, enough functions. Very good. So it's 1. Okay. So what is the dimensions of my five-dimensional Yukawa coupling? So that's -5, +4, +1, +1. This guy must have dimensions of -1. So the Yukawa coupling in 5D is not just a number. It's actually something that has dimensions of 1 over mass. So the first thing, the Yukawa is dimensionful. Okay, so then I want to take this theory in five dimensions and I just want to describe the low energy limit of it. So instead of keeping everybody, all the degrees of freedom in these two fields, I just want to keep the zero modes because I want to describe the Yukawas for the zero modes, for the standard model fields. So I want to go from this integral lambda phi d from this integral to something that just depends on the zero modes of these guys. Alright? So this is going to be equals to d4x lambda 4d, the Yukawa coupling in four dimensions. My Higgs is already in four dimensions, so I'm fine. And then I plug these two guys, phi 0 of x, phi 0 right handed of x. So that's the identification I want to do. I want to look at this theory in five dimensions as a in the low energy limit where it's just some degrees of freedom in four dimensions, only keeping the zero modes. So if you do that, you obtain something interesting. That your Yukawa in four dimensions is actually proportional to your Yukawa in 5D multiplied by the curvature, and then an exponential of 1 minus CL minus CR K pi RC. So you see, to obtain this, to go from here to there, the only thing I'm doing is say this guy is just the four-dimensional field, the zero mode, and then exponential of 1/2 minus c of y. And then I'm taking the wave function of these two guys and integrating over y. But I'm not integrating because there is a delta function, so the only thing I'm doing is actually putting, instead of y, pi RC, the length of the extra dimension. So what is interesting in this equation is I start with something, some fundamental parameter, mass, a dimensionful parameter that is order of the curvature. So I can set this to be order one. Remember, these C's are just the mass of the fermion over the curvature. So I'm saying this order one as well. And I get completely different Yukawas. Right? So it's again dimensional transmutation. You start with two different scales. You put order one parameters in an exponential, and then you get completely different results. So the first consequence of that is that the actual Yukawa is not anything weird. It's really order 1 over k. And also that small changes in the location here in CL or CR lead to exponentially suppressed differences in the Yukawas. So why is warp extra dimensions are able to solve the hierarchy problem is because there is no hierarchy problem. It's just that we can choose order one parameters. Everything is natural, but then when we see it from the four-dimensional point of view, it looks as exponentially suppressed. And this is an improvement from the standard model because it's obtaining hierarchies without symmetries. And that sounds familiar, right? This is what we say at the beginning is possible to do in a strong couple theories. We can explain why two scales are so different just because there is a strong coupling. In Randall-Sundum, in extra dimensions, the mechanism it seems different. It's just localization inside the extra dimension, but the result is the same. Small changes, exponential differences in the 4D view. So that was a very clear example of hierarchies without symmetries. It's a different way from the standard model. Conceptually, at least, we are going away from the standard model way. And using these kind of tricks, you can not only solve the fermion hierarchy problem, you can also solve the fermion, the flavor problem of extra dimensions. You can also explain neutrino masses. You can do a lot of model building thanks to this behavior. And I think I'm done. Any questions?
So the thing to remember is this geometry is anti de Sitter. That's an interesting thing for the future.
Yeah, so next week we'll start analyzing this from another point of view. Yeah. So where all these parameters will be, instead of just thinking on an extra dimensional model, we will think on a composite strongly coupled model, having a conformal symmetry that we are breaking with the relevant operator. So we are going to have fun with the hologram of that. So from now, I could just continue doing more phenomenology of extra dimensions, or we could go directly to the ADS-CFT interpretation. So you choose. ADS-CFT, okay. The phenomenology is, we are going to discuss the phenomenology a little bit, so you expect Kaluza-Klein towers, big deal, and at some point you may expect black hole production. But apparently in Randall-Sundum it's very difficult to produce black holes at the LHC, so maybe we'll never see that. So the phenomenology is not that different, but okay. So we can do the ADS-CFT, it's even nicer. All right, any questions? All right. See you Monday.